I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
This is a podcast about the killing of Ahmaud Arbery. It contains moments of violence, profanity, and uncensored racism. It may not be suitable for all audiences.
Ahmaud Arbery was killed in broad daylight, a little after 1 in the afternoon on a Sunday. Now, we know Travis McMichael shot him 3 times at very close range with heavy buckshot from a 12-gauge shotgun. We know this happened after McMichael and his father and Roddy Bryan used their pickup trucks to chase and then trap Ahmaud on a neighborhood street. But here's something we don't know, something that I find deeply troubling. What possessed these 3 white men? And what motivated them to chase the young black man? This is Buried Truths. I'm Hank Klibanoff.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Support for WABE's local coverage on maternal health and mortality comes from Georgia Health Initiative, whose mission is to inspire and promote collective action that advances health equity for all Georgians. Learn more at GeorgiaHealthInitiative.org.
I still don't get why, in 2020, Greg McMichael, a former police officer, when he became suspicious of Ahmaud, didn't just call his former colleagues, the cops. Jim Barger is an attorney who grew up on St. Simon's Island. He wrote an extraordinary piece about the Arbery killing for the digital magazine, The Bitter Southerner. I asked him why he thought the McMichaels decided to chase Ahmaud.
This was fulfillment of deep-seated male hero fantasy. We're fed that from a very early age, and it may even be part of our DNA to be heroes. But then you combine that with this racial fear, and you get this evil brew where there's a desire to catch him, dead or alive. And if you call the police, well, you miss that opportunity. So they got their guns, and they loaded up like a posse. In 2020, do we expect to see that happen? And I think that's what's so shocking is that, yes, that has happened many, 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 many times in our country's history.
And then there's the video that documents the killing. I'll never understand why William Roddy Bryan made that video in the first place. But I was also curious about why he and Greg McMichael wanted the footage to be made public. Apparently, they thought it exonerated the McMichaels, and I can't help but think that if they'd kept the video under wraps, all 3 of the murder suspects might be walking around free today. So Bryan showed his video to Greg McMichael, and McMichael took it to a friend of his, a lawyer in Brunswick, and the 2 of them decided it should be made public. So McMichael turned it over to a local radio station, according to the lawyer. Now, the lawyer's name is Alan Tucker. He was born and raised in Brunswick and has practiced law there for nearly 4 decades. And he has known Greg McMichael for years. One of my Emory students interviewed Tucker at length. The attorney, who is white, said his parents live in Satilla Shores, in the same neighborhood where Ahmaud was shot. The Brunswick that Tucker knows is not racially divided. And he claims that the whole narrative of Ahmaud as a harmless jogger has been badly overplayed.
This whole thing about he's a, you know, just a black man jogging down the road in a white neighborhood was just bullshit. Now, did he deserve to be shot? No. Should Travis Michael have taken a shotgun? No. Is it a horrible, tragic thing? Absolutely. But let's base our opinions on the facts and not what they want it to be. You know, he was not a black man jogging through a white neighborhood that two white supremacists pulled up behind in a pickup truck and shot in the back.
Actually, that appears to be an accurate description of what did happen, except that Ahmaud was not shot in the back, and Ahmaud's three pursuers didn't come from behind him in their pickup truck. Instead, the men trapped him with their pickup trucks. Then one of them, Travis, had a shotgun aimed at Ahmaud when he came fully into view. Now, Tucker also does not believe Ahmaud was out on a casual jog. He says a neighbor's security camera showed Ahmaud walking, not jogging, something that Tucker sees as incriminating. Well, here's what he says.
The security camera footage of that was taken on the day of the incident, which literally shows him walking down the road and walking into the house. He is not jogging. He is not running. He was not a fellow jogging down the highway, minding his own business, sheds a different light on this. The only time he runs is when the neighbor across the street comes out to the tree line on his telephone where he's making a 911 call to the police and screams at him, "You need to get your ass out of that house. I'm calling the police." That's when he runs down the road.
I've listened to the interview with Alan Tucker, watched the videos, and I just don't see what he sees. And I don't understand his interpretation. How does Ahmaud slowing down to a walk, if he slowed down to a walk, become incriminating? How is walking more suggestive of criminal intent than jogging? And while I can't find a version of the 911 call that has the neighbor across the street yelling at an intruder, and I will say that if he did, I have no difficulty understanding why the intruder left promptly and did so at an accelerated speed. Tucker insists that his friend Greg McMichael is no racist.
I don't think race had a damn thing to do with it. I'm sorry, I just don't. I've never known Greg McMichaels to make a racial statement about anybody. He treated everybody, regardless of their color or gender, with the respect and dignity that they deserved.
There's a fair amount of evidence in this case that Travis McMichael and Roddy Bryan are racist. And we've talked to some high school classmates and others in Brunswick who think Greg McMichael also holds Old South attitudes about black people. We'll get to that later. But there's no question, after the Arbery case broke nationwide, people all over the country began calling his death a modern-day lynching. This is Ahmaud's father, Marcus, speaking to PBS in May 2020.
The video speak loud and plain as day. Check that lynch mob out. It's a lynch mob. So they're trying to cover up with it and messed up.
Alan Tucker says the video supports the McMichaels' claim of self-defense.
If you break down the video one frame at a time, you can see what happened rather than sit there and play it all the way through. If you break it down one frame at a time, you can actually see, I mean, Mr. Aubrey got 12 to 15 licks upside Travis's head.
Now, I don't want to encourage you to view the video. It's not easy to watch. But if you do, I wonder if you'll see what I saw. That is, I saw Ahmaud throw a punch or two, yes, but not 12 to 15 of them. In fact, I don't think that was even possible, given that, at least on the videotape that I've seen, Ahmaud has taken this massive wound to the chest before he can even reach Travis McMichael. Now, when Ahmaud did reach Travis, he punched him, but he seemed more focused on wrestling the shotgun away. Now, I'm going to digress here just for a moment, and this may be way more than you want to know about buckshot and shotguns. Simply put, buckshot is a shotgun load used to shoot bucks, that is, large animals, The shot in the shotgun refers to the pellets within the shell. Now, there can be small pellets, as with birdshot, or there can be large ones, as with buckshot. Travis McMichael's shotgun discharged 3 times, and Ahmad suffered 3 wounds, once near the center of the chest, once in the upper left chest, and once in the right wrist. Both chest wounds did catastrophic damage, fracturing multiple ribs, piercing the middle and lower lobes of the right lung, severing an artery, and fracturing the left shoulder and shoulder blade. The spread was so tight at that range that each load of buckshot made only a single entry wound. The medical examiner noted 13 separate exit wounds in Ahmad's back. Alan Tucker, the attorney to whom Greg McMichael gave the video of the shooting, concedes that Ahmad may have had no choice but to fight.
Now, the other side of it is this. If it had been me, and I came around a truck, and somebody's got a gun, what do? You fight? You flee? You freeze? I'm not taking forward what Aubrey did. He might have taken the only action at the time that he thought he could possibly do because he had a shotgun pointed at him. So I'm not going to find fault with him. He shouldn't have had a shotgun pointed at him, ever. And if he hadn't had a shotgun pointed at him, he'd still be alive today. Travis should have never got out of the damn truck with a shotgun.
Tucker seems to realize there's a hole in his argument that race didn't play a role in the killing. He's confident it wasn't a factor in Greg McMichael's actions, but faced with the report that Travis called Arbery an effing N-word, as Arbery lay dying on the street, Tucker demurs.
Well, it is a problem. My personal opinion is you got to take that in consideration, the fact that people who've just been in a fight usually run their mouth when they shouldn't and say things they shouldn't.
Support for WABE comes from 100 Miles, a nonprofit committed to preserving Georgia's 100-mile coast. Protecting this critical coastal ecosystem takes all of us. Watch the stories of the innovators and future leaders who help keep our coast flowing at ourgeorgiacoast.org.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Travis McMichael and Roddy Bryan casually and repeatedly deployed the N-word in their everyday lives, according to the testimony in the Marathon preliminary hearing in June. The 7-hour proceeding had just one witness, Georgia Bureau of Investigation agent Richard Dial, who detailed his investigation for the prosecutor and 5 defense attorneys, 2 each for the McMichaels and 1 for Bryan. 2 hours in, Prosecutor Jesse Evans broaches one of the most explosive elements of the case, the hateful words you heard in episode 1.
What Mr. Bryan said he heard Travis McMichael say prior to police arriving after the fatal shooting.
Yes, Mr. Bryan.
Let's break from the hearing for a moment. You're about to hear the defense attorneys ask questions that seem to dig their clients deeper and deeper into a hole. But it's important to keep in mind that the preliminary hearing, where all this is coming out, is pretty much the prosecution's show. The state will present as much of its case as necessary, but reveal as little as it can, to persuade the judge the case is strong and should go forward. For the defense, This is their first opportunity to find out how many aces and wild cards the prosecution is holding. Jason Sheffield, one of the lawyers for Travis McMichael, later schooled us on the purpose of the preliminary hearing. Sheffield and his partner, Robert Rubin, are prominent, experienced members of the Atlanta Defense Bar. They've been through this routine many times. So let's hear from Sheffield before we return to the hearing.
A preliminary hearing is simply a presentation of one side of the case. It is an opportunity for us to explore the theories and the attitudes of the government and the state witnesses. And so we are there to understand the state's theories. We're there to ask hard questions. We're there to ask questions that we don't know the answer to so that we can learn the information and then do our own investigation to see if what they're saying is true.
Right. So if it sounds as if the lawyers are asking questions that they don't know the answers to, that's because they are.
There were some hard questions that we asked, and there were some tough answers that we received, but that is our intent. That is our strategy.
Now here's Sheffield questioning Agent Dial at the hearing. He begins with Dial's earlier testimony that Roddy Bryan told law enforcement that Travis McMichael said effing N-word over Ahmaud's body.
I understand that you have said that Mr. Bryan has put this statement coming out of the mouth of Travis McMichael, this horrible thing. In looking so far in the case, whether it's on Travis's interaction through the neighborhood Facebook page or on his phone, have you seen any other evidence that he has used that horrible N-word anywhere else?
Yes, for many times.
Okay, and where?
On the Instagram post, somebody sends him, this is on January 2nd of 2020, someone sends him a video or a picture. We were not able to recover that from the phone. That's one of the reasons why I haven't searched one out for Instagram. They send that out. He says, makes the comment, that would only be better if they'd have blown that effing N-words or blown that N-words head off.
Anywhere else that you've seen that?
Yes. There are several conversations. But one particular one that comes to mind is he made the statement that he loved his job because he was out on a boat and there weren't any N-words anywhere.
And now we hear from Roddy Bryan's lawyer, Kevin Goff, who is asking Agent Dial about whether he thinks racial animus played a role in his client's actions. Bryan's attorney, Goff, notes that his client turned over 5 years' worth of Facebook posts to the police. And Agent Dial agrees that he was cooperative. And then Attorney Goff says,
so we don't have any racist talk on there, do we?
Not in social media. There was on his phone.
On his phone? Okay. Yes. Did you find then something on his phone that you found troubling with respect to whether this case involves racial animus?
I did, yes.
Can you tell us what that is?
There were various comments that Mr. Bryan made concerning race, using racial derogative terms, statements that he made in reference to, I think he was at an airport and he said, it's great, there's not as many, and he used a racial term up here, stuff that I felt showed his viewpoint and bias that I believe, based upon my opinion, played a role in how he interpreted what he saw that day and the actions he took. I was made aware of several that I personally found very disturbing concerning the references that were made. As far as a total number of text claims, I do not have a number for that.
Of course, those communications are also not, however regrettable and unfortunate, not all that uncommon in the South, are they?
Is Roddy Bryan's lawyer really invoking that argument? You know that, well, a lot of people around here use the N-word. You can almost hear the sound of the backfire as GBI agent Richard Dial responds once more.
I will tell you, sir, there are terms that he used that I've never encountered before in my experience for racial term he used. As far as the generality of racial comments, I don't know.
Jason Sheffield told me later that in spite of the testimony about the use of racist terms, that's not what this case is about. And I imagine it's not what he wants it to be about.
What we see currently is that there is an explanation that does not include racist motives to end the life of a black man.
We're not likely to hear what that explanation is until the trial, whenever that might take place.
Until we get to that moment where we can share all that with a jury in a courtroom, we simply have to do it the way that the law tells us we have to do it, which is through the court system.
We also spoke briefly with Roddy Bryan's lawyer, Kevin Goff. Now, shortly after he took over Bryan's defense, he made some news when he called for a trial as soon as possible and said he was willing to seat as a jury the first 12 people who walked into the courtroom.
We're very confident in our defense. Roddy Bryan did not commit any crimes. He's not guilty of anything the state has accused him of, and we believe any 12 Americans would agree.
We asked Goff about the video that Bryan recorded, and he declined to explain why Bryan would do that, why he wanted to create a video of the pursuit in the first place, nor would he say how he intended to defend against accusations that Bryan casually uses racist terms in his everyday speech. He did, however, repeat this assertion, which he made during the preliminary hearing, about why his client joined the McMichaels chase of Ahmaud.
Roddy Bryan did nothing that any patriotic American wouldn't have done under the same circumstances.
Now, we have left messages with people at the law office of the other defense attorney, Frank Hoag, with Greg McMichael, and he did not return our calls. So, the state has documented a history of Travis McMichael and Roddy Bryan repeatedly using racial epithets. Not other people saying they talk that way, but the two men themselves using them in texts and on social media. This will factor heavily into the prosecution. Now, it hasn't been proved that, after the shooting, Travis McMichael used that racial slur as he looked down at Ahmaud's body. Bryan claims that McMichael said that, but the claim is all we have. The jury will have to decide whether it believes Roddy Bryan. And even if it does, though, we need to be honest with ourselves about the past outcomes of these kinds of cases. History suggests that defendants like these most often are found not guilty. Now, perhaps the self-defense argument will prevail. Maybe the jury will reflect the population of the 5-county judicial district, which is 72% white. Now, I want to be clear that I'm not suggesting white people, maybe even most white people, wouldn't vote to convict if they were convinced. But a guilty verdict must be unanimous. So it's always possible that one or two jurors will perceive little value in the life of Ahmaud Arbery and let the defendants off. As I said, it's happened before. But all that has set me to thinking. The racial epithet attributed to Travis McMichael is as unambiguous as it can be. Can a person in anger use vile racist language and not really mean it, not really feel that way? Or can a moment of rage clearly define who we are and what we believe? Given the circumstances of Ahmaud's death, if Travis McMichael used those words, it's hard not to conclude that he meant exactly what he said. But he used a word that's been with us for at least 400 years. When you're connecting the dots in history, connect those. We've handed down hatred for centuries, undiluted, undiminished. That hatred may well explain why Ahmaud Arbery is dead. If these three men are convicted in the murder of Ahmaud Arbery, they will be sent away for life. But where will the hate go? Not to prison. The hate wherever it is, will continue to imprison us.
Coming up on the next episode of Buried Truths.
You know, you might have made a bad grade on a test. Something might have ruined your day. But when you got to practice and you were on defense with Maude, he got us pumped up.
The 8-minute, 4-second encounter, which ultimately involved one, then two more police officers, was recorded on Conego's body camera.
Buried Truths is produced by WABE Atlanta. Our senior producer is David Baraswain, writing by Hank Klibanoff and Richard Hallix. Our executive producers are J.N. Berry and John Hawes. Special thanks to Scott Wolfel, Stephen Key, Alita McCalman, Kendall Foote, and Raphael Fetrot. Hank Klibanoff is a former newspaper reporter and editor and co-author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Race Beat. He's also a professor at Emory University, where he directs the Georgia Civil Rights Cold Cases Project. We want to extend a special thanks to the Emory students who helped with this season of Buried Truths. Jake Bush, Hannah Cherick, Jordan Flowers, Cameron Katz, and Sage Mason spent the summer of 2020 investigating the Ahmaud Arbery case. Thanks also to student Rowan Thomas, whose earlier research contributed to this season. Visit buriedtruths.org to find lesson plans based on prior seasons of the podcast and discussion questions for your next podcast club. You can also sign up for our newsletter, and that's where you can support Buried Truths by making a donation. Again, that's at buriedtruths.org. On social, we're at Buried Truths Pod. Please look us up and follow us. And if you haven't already, take a moment to rate the show on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. It'll help more people find this important podcast. Thank you for listening to Buried Truths.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The world is full of mysteries. Are ghosts real? Is that yogurt expired? Hey, the unknown can be scary, but when you donate to WABE, you know where your money is going. Your gift supports the journalism that keeps you informed and the programs that pull back the curtain on complicated stories. Help us make the world less mysterious. Become a member now. Go online to wabe.org/donate, and thanks.